The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. I bet on FanDuel as often and as comfortably as I possibly can. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. There are fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. So many bet types. Same game parlay bets, live betting, player props, futures, and so much more. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so they know I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, Keith Idek is here, BoxingScene.com, senior writer, columnist over there. What's happening, Keith?
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man? How you doing?
A lot is going on, and there's a bunch of topics I want to get into with you today, but can we begin with, like, shout out to Marius Bredis for leaning all in on the Jake Paul stuff? Like, Marius Bredis getting what is either a tattoo... It's got Jake on his leg. He's got the name Jake now on his leg right now as he becomes the latest boxer. This time an active boxer and a pretty damn good boxer. Bredis, arguably the top guy at cruiserweight, lobbying for a fight against Jake Paul, which proves my point, Keith. Like, these guys can dump on Jake and what he's doing all they want, but to quote Canelo, they want the payday, the payday, the payday when it comes to Jake Paul.
I'm not convinced it's a real tattoo.
Either way, you're still inking yourself in the leg and you're calling out Jake Paul. Well, you are the number one cruiserweight in the world. You're calling out Jake Paul.
There's a very big difference between a real tattoo and a fake tattoo. And you could ask Pete Davidson, who's now getting 97 tattoos removed from his entire body, how different they are. But I don't really understand what he's trying to accomplish. I mean, he's getting some attention out of it, and he's not really a fighter who's gotten much attention despite being a world champion and maybe the best cruiserweight in boxing now. Why is a guy with five fights supposed to fight a world champion?
He's not.
I know, but so the point is, it almost makes him look goofy and thirsty for trying to, like, he doesn't really think that Jake Paul is going to fight him, right? I mean, and in Jake Paul's defense, whatever anyone thinks of Jake Paul, he has five fights, right? Or is it six now?
Five.
Whatever it is.
Going into six, right. Would be his next.
Yeah, he's going into his sixth fight. And to even consider fighting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who is a shell of a shell of a shell of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., that's a pretty big step for him because he is a real boxer, whatever people might think. You know, he's older now, of course, 36 or whatever age he is, and unfortunately, a flawed failure of a fighter, but he is a real boxer, you know? So if he fights him, he would deserve some credit for doing that. He won't get it because the cesspool that is boxing social media and such, they won't give him any credit for anything. But
the problem is with boxers jumping on Jake Paul is that there are receipts out there. Like, I had this conversation with Sergio Mora, like, multiple times, right? Where I point out to Sergio that his first 10 opponents were terrible. I heard Tony Bellew on DAZN, and I love Tony, was a take on all comers guy at the end. But his fourth pro fight, his opponent had 92 losses. We got to stop pretending like just because guys like have boxing resumes that they're real boxers too. Most of these guys have full-time jobs and train at Equinox or something along those lines.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I thought we were going to have to put you and Sergio in a timeout there. You were going back and forth so much there about his resume. And yeah, I mean, geez.
The ZON producers are going to have to I need to meet Warren Kronberger and ask him and see what he's doing.
Kronberger is not a boxer's name. I can say
it's
that much.
Just not.
Jesus, but... but yeah, I mean, look, it's the guy who does the taxes of the fighter who, you know, brings his purse to him or whatever. Look, I understand the hate directed at Jake Paul from boxers who've been, you know, really working hard at their craft as amateur fighters coming up through the amateur system. And then, you know, trying to make some semblance of a living in a sport in which it's not very easy to do that. So I get some of the jealousy and the dislike directed toward him, but it is what it is, and it's not going away. And until someone beats him and beats him badly, it's not going away, because he has a fan base, you know, maybe not quite as big as people might have thought at one time, but he has a fan base that are willing to pack arenas and willing to buy his pay-per-views. So he's here to stay until someone beats him. And look, I think also you have to give him credit for taking boxing seriously, much more so maybe than his brother has, and has really attempted to get better at it. And he is improving. You know, Tyron Woodley, obviously not a boxer, 39 years old and all that, took the fight on the rematch on short notice. But that was a picture perfect knockout that he scored in December. And it showed some signs of improvement from him. And again, until someone beats him and beats him badly, he's not going anywhere. And for world champions to be calling him out, I understand it to some extent, because he's trying to get paid too, and he has a family to support and everything. It just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of looks goofy to me. I don't know. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to, you want to hear about Jake Paul, go back and we'll listen to the previous episode of this podcast when he was on, or watch any of the episodes of Jabs over on DAZN. We go at it pretty good on that subject. Keith, I do want to talk about what was revealed as a pretty dark story in boxing this week, when Terrence Crawford, one of the best fighters in the world, welterweight champion, recently decided to leave Top Rank after his contract expired, filed a lawsuit against Top Rank, a 6-count multi-million dollar complaint that alleges 2 separate counts of breach of contract, 1 count each of fraudulent misrepresentation, negligent misrepresentation, tortious breach of implied covenant of good faith, and accuses Top Rank in this 23-page complaint of, quote, extensive allegations of racial bias against Terrence Crawford and, quote, disparate treatment of black boxers. There's a lot to unpack here, Keith, but, you know, you and I have covered Top Rank for a long time. We've covered Bob Arum for a long time. What was your reaction when you got wind of this lawsuit?
I was pretty surprised by the racial element to it. Not terribly surprised that Terrence Crawford would file a lawsuit, just because I think more than anything, probably if you had Terrence Crawford in a quiet moment, Chris, I don't think that he believes that he's going to get any damages out of this lawsuit. I think this was more a response to Bob Arum saying some things about Terrence Crawford last year and earlier this year. 2021, the end of 2020, mm-hmm. and throughout 2021, he had said some disparaging things about Terrence Crawford that, frankly, Bob Arum should not have said. I mean, he's your fighter. You're working in conjunction with each other, theoretically anyway, to make him as big a star as possible. Terrence Crawford thinks that Bob Arum did all those things or said all those things because he thought, or he was convinced, that Terrence Crawford was not going to resign with Top Rank, which he's not. Bob, you know, look, you know, Bob's a polarizing guy, obviously. And some of those things that he said about Terrence Crawford, he didn't say anything racist about Terrence Crawford. He said some things about Terrence Crawford's marketability and the fact that he's not a pay-per-view draw. Newsflash, he's not.
Yeah.
You know, I do think in some ways Top Rank maybe got some criticism that it didn't solely deserve for the Porter fight, for it only doing 135 to 140,000 buys. That I thought was more ESPN's fault, and Top Rank has to, whether people realize this or not or want to accept it or not, Top Rank has to listen to ESPN's directive, because they're paying the money. They're the reason Top Rank has this $90+ million to work with every year in the budget. So they have to do what ESPN said. And ESPN wanted to basically strong arm people into subscribing to their bundles or ESPN Plus, Disney packages, and all that stuff by only allowing the Porter Crawford fight to be available on through ESPN Plus. That certainly cost them some buys. I'm not saying it was a 500,000 buy pay-per-view fight, but it wasn't a 135,000 buy fight either. And they did some damage there that maybe was not quite Top Rank's fault. I'm not really sure what damages Terrence Crawford is looking for, Chris, because I'll say this. He fought twice during the pandemic. One of those times I was there, and I was at both. But the first time, there were maybe 200 or 300 people in the room because they couldn't bring more people in there than that for the due to the COVID restrictions at MGM Grand Conference Center. So he was paid $4 million to fight Kell Brook in front of less than 300 people. I don't know what more you're expecting than that. First of all, by the way, you're fighting Kell Brook, a shell of Kell Brook, for starters. Number two, you're being paid $4 million-ish to do that. I don't know what you could really, and then he was paid $6 million guarantee roughly to fight Sean Porter. Mm-hmm. So combined, the two fights that he engaged in during the pandemic, his guarantees were combined roughly $10 million. If that's being wronged by your employer, boy, I'd really like Viacom CBS to start wronging me and DAZN and Sports Illustrated to start wronging you.
It's like for context, like, there are a handful, maybe less, maybe one or two fighters that do massive pay-per-view numbers. Really right now it's Canelo who, you know, can command a $35+ million guarantee on his contract. Other than that, like making $4 million and $6 million as a guarantee on a pay-per-view is a big number. There are not a lot of fighters out there that are getting that type of guarantee. But I guess if they want to play semantics and say I was promised X, I wasn't delivered, you know, that is a breach of contract. I don't know enough about that. I'm not of the inner workings. But when you accuse someone of racial bias, to me, you better have a smoking gun. Like, you better have an email or a voicemail or I don't know, something. Because that's a pretty heavy charge to make, Keith, especially against somebody. I mean, Bob's been in the business for like 50 years. I don't know everything about Bob Arum, but as someone that has written multiple profiles on him for SI, who off and on have kind of flirted with doing a book with him in the past. So I've had a lot of conversations with Bob Arum and talking to people, a lot of people that have known Bob Arum over the years, all walks of life. People that he's dealt with over in South Africa when he was doing fights over there. Don King, I've had long conversations with Don King about Bob Arum. Al Sharpton, I had many conversations with Al Sharpton about Bob Arum. These people had negative things to say about Arum. Don't get me wrong. They weren't like, boy, he's awesome. But racism? Never once. Never once did that come up. So that threw me, Keith, because, you know, and you've covered him a long time now as well. I guess anything's possible. But if you're going to make that kind of accusation, you better have the evidence to back it up. And based on reading that complaint, they're not really specifying anything except for one, you know, ambiguous kind of quote where he's talking about how, and I'm paraphrasing here, but like, you know, PBC will say, don't listen to the white guy or something like that. So I that to me is not evidence of racial bias. Like, I just don't see it with Bob Arum.
Chris, I think maybe the most telling thing that you said there, and it's something that I had thought about since yesterday as well, you know, having covered boxing for as long as I have, and of course, as long as you have as well, you know, Don King and Bob Arum would have killed each other had they been able to get away with it. Absolutely. Once upon a time. And Don King has said a lot of negative things about Bob Arum, and you know, some of it has had racial overtones and such, but I've never really heard him say that Bob Arum is a racist. And if Don King is not going to say that Bob Arum is a racist, you'd probably be pretty hard pressed to find other people who would, because they were really at each other's throats for decades. And they've since patched it up and they're both 90 years old and they're mellower versions of themselves and such. But, you know, it's a really dangerous game to play in the sense that, you know, Bob obviously says things that he should not say. And, you know, people who work within Top Rank, who care about the company and care about his well-being and all that, they try to rein him in and get him not to say some of these things, but it's just not going to, he has no filter. He's 90 years old. And I'm not excusing any of the things that he said, because I understand you're still accountable and you're a very prominent person in this sport. And you can't just say some of the things that he has said. I wish he didn't say a lot of the things that he said about Terrence Crawford, because I thought some of those things, or most of those things, were unnecessary, and it just didn't help their relationship at all. So I do think that Terrence, maybe more than anything, is kind of trying to get back at Bob for some of the things that he said, because Crawford held his tongue for a very long time. He didn't say anything negative about Bob. he just kind of, I'm paraphrasing, but I remember him saying something like, well, that's just Bob being Bob. But it had to be hurtful to a guy who thought maybe he was closer to Bob than maybe it turned out to be or whatever. I'm not saying Bob didn't care about him once upon a time at all, but it was, it had to be hurtful for Crawford, a guy with a lot of pride who I have repeatedly said, despite sometimes him being difficult to deal with, I have repeatedly said on this podcast and other places, you know, you could make a strong argument still today that he's the best pound for pound fighter in the world. Now I get the resume talk. I get all that, but I mean, he's an elite level fighter. I personally think that if he fought Errol Spence, the Terrence Crawford would win, but we'd all love to see it. I think maybe that's the most valid claim that he's making in this complaint here, that, you know, maybe they made some promises related to the Spence fight that they knew that they couldn't deliver on, but that's kind of on them too. They're not naive. I mean, Terrence Crawford is a shrewd dude, man. I mean, he's no dummy. So did he really think that because Bob Arum said they're going to make the Spence fight next, that it was definitely going to happen? I mean, he knows all the obstacles that existed between him and Errol Spence that would have prevented that fight from happening, that is still preventing that fight from happening today. And primarily what I've tried to tell people, Chris, I know you've spoken about this as well. The thing that people need to understand is that both Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence Jr. think that their fight is worth more in terms of guarantees than anyone who controls the money. So until that changes, the fight will not happen. Now you can, there are certainly arguments to be made that maybe Crawford wants it more than Errol Spence does based on some of the things that Errol Spence has said. You could certainly lean that way. But the point is that the fight will not happen until they're realistic with their financial demands. And then I've seen some other things like, oh, well, this is kind of like the Pacquiao. Stop it. It's not. Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao was the perfect storm of our lifetimes, and it will not be replicated. So just stop saying, anyone who thinks it's going to be anything close to that, it won't, because those guys walked away from that fight with more than $300 million combined. It's a crazy number, $300 million combined. You know, Manny Pacquiao, who was the B side, I guess you'd have to say, right? I mean, he walked away from it with almost $130 million. Mm-hmm. Now, people don't want to pay. And when I say people, I mean, Bob Arum and Al Haymon primarily, they don't think it's worth paying Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence a combined $25 million in guarantees. So those two things are not comparable. And again, until they, you know, lessen their demands or have some other proof from a pay-per-view perspective that the fight is worth more than Al Haymon and Bob Arum are convinced that it's worth, it's not going to happen. And it's unfortunate for boxing fans because they deserve that fight. It's the fight that people have wanted to see for the last couple of years. And we're nowhere closer to it happening than we were 2 or 3 years ago, despite Terrence Crawford not being with Top Rank anymore.
And Crawford made the decision in September of 2018 to re-sign with Top Rank. And Errol Spence was out there on the PBC side at that point. Other fighters that were on the PBC side, the Keith Thurmans of the world, were out there. I mean, Terrence Crawford is a smart guy. Like, he had to know when he signed that deal that it wasn't going to be easy to get the fights that he was looking for. He signed that deal, presumably, because it was a really good deal for him, because his guarantees were pretty high, and he was going to get an opportunity to make more guaranteed money there than anywhere else. So we'll see how this lawsuit plays out. But there was some
Chris, can I say,
yeah, sure.
Can I just say one other thing? And going over the, going through the lawsuit, I saw some perplexing things in the in this complaint. Like, it was written by someone who has virtually no idea what they're talking about. Now, this is not Terrence Crawford writing this complaint. I understand that. That's why he's paying a lot of money for a legal team to do it. But there were references to Todd DeBuff saying that Todd DeBuff just sits around smiling, waiting for Bob to turn over the business. Anyone who knows anything about Top Rank knows that Todd DeBuff is running the business. You know, Todd and Brad Jacobs and Carl Moretti and you know, obviously Brad Goodman and Bruce Trampler from a matchmaking perspective, they're the ones running the company. Bob is the face of the company, and he's the guy that gets quoted and all that, because Todd's not really all that comfortable with that. And he, you know, they allow Bob to not allow, I mean, it's his company, but Bob is still the face of the company. And sometimes that's to their detriment, which is why we're in this situation, because he has said some things that he unfortunately should not have said. But that doesn't make him a racist, because again, like you said, Chris, you know, I talk to a lot of people in this business. You know, that's my job. I'm constantly talking to people just like you are And people say a lot of things about Bob, and they call him a lot of names, and some of them start with an R. But I've never heard racist. I haven't heard it. And I've personally seen no evidence of him being biased against Black fighters. He's always been an advocate for Black fighters. The one instance that's fairly obvious to everyone and was a major theme, you know, over the last decade and a half, is he mishandled Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. He did. He underestimated Floyd Mayweather's value, maybe more than humanly imaginable, because yeah. Look what Floyd Mayweather became. Floyd Mayweather made almost $1 billion as a boxer. So Floyd Mayweather, Leonard Ellerbe, Al Haymon were completely correct about what Floyd Mayweather could become. Yeah. And Bob Arum was wrong about that. And to his credit, Bob Arum has repeatedly said, I was wrong about that. I didn't know how to market him to the Black audience. He said it repeatedly. He made a huge mistake. It was a problem and a mistake. And Mayweather's well within his right to complain about that. But I mean, I just don't, you know, a guy who was an advocate for Muhammad Ali and promoted all these legendary Black fighters, George Foreman, who came out in Bob's defense yesterday, you know, Marvin Hagler, like legendary fighters, Tommy Hearns, right? All these guys. I've never heard one of them say that he's a racist. So
no, I haven't either. So I certainly hope you get a level in an accusation like that. You have something to back it up. Otherwise, it's a bad look for Terrence Crawford. We'll see. Yeah, go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, one other thing. You better have more proof than something that I don't want to disparage the dead, but you better have more proof than something that the late Bob Lee, who could not have been a more besmirched person in boxing. He served time in federal prison for taking bribes, the former president of the IBF. Mm. He's one of the examples they're using in this complaint. Dillian White is another one. I mean, you better get some more credible examples than that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, let's talk about Canelo Alvarez and what's next for him. Our friend Mike Coppinger went on TV on ESPN suggesting that there have been talks going on for Canelo against Jermall Charlo. So Eddie Reynoso took to social media after that, the manager and trainer of Canelo. And he basically said there have been no talks as of yet. We're going to get to something in the next few days. Charlo has no opponent. Canelo, we've heard the cruiserweight talk, Keith. You know, 168's got Charlo and David Benavidez. You've heard Eddie Reynoso, though, say in the past that they like the idea of a fight against Jermall Charlo. Do you think we're trending in that direction?
I don't think there's an option B, to be honest with you, Chris. I've been saying for a few weeks, I was on the Showtime boxing podcast a few weeks ago, and we're breaking it down. And I just don't see any other way it goes than him fighting Charlo, because primarily no one in their right mind is going to pay Canelo Alvarez anywhere close to the amount of money he's going to want to climb into the ring in the beginning of May to fight the winner of this cruiserweight fight on January 29th. No one's paying for that. Not Eddie Hearn and DAZN, not Al Haymon, Showtime, PBC. No one's paying for it. So that's not. And also, who's willingly getting into business with Don King at this point? You might as well just drive yourself crazy. There's no point to it. And no one cares about the fight. Because the biggest thing about this was Eddie Reynoso's idea, not Canelo's. And Canelo came out and said that a few weeks ago, that he didn't even know that Eddie Reynoso was going to propose this at the WBC convention. I thought it was sort of telling that Canelo made a point of saying that, as if to say, yeah, it would be nice to be a five-division world champion, but it ain't the only thing for me, basically. So for him to be paid the amount of money that he's going to want to be paid, which is going to be more than his guarantee for the Caleb Plant fight, he's going to have to fight Jermall Charlo, because that's the most commercially viable fight in which he can make that kind of money. People have wanted to see that fight for quite some time. Charlo wants the fight. He's, you know, obviously more than willing to move up to 168 pounds to make it happen. I'm interested in the Dmitry Bivol fight, but I'm less interested in that than I am in the Charlo or Benavidez fight. He clearly favors fighting Charlo next over Benavidez. He has said it openly in public. And I don't know that, if you're DAZN and Eddie, you know, you're dangling moving back up to light heavyweight to fight Bivol as the fight to come back to DAZN, which is a real fight. It's a good fight. It's an interesting fight. Bivol's not a huge light heavyweight, not as nearly as big of a puncher as Artur Beterbiev. So the fight would make sense for Canelo. I just don't know that the way DAZN is going about its business now, and they're still spending a lot of money, but they're not spending the way that they once did. Could you justify trying to pay, I mean, you're going to pay him $35 to $40 million to compete with what he would make for fighting Charlo, to just for a temporary public relations win, because he's not going to sign a multi-fight deal with anyone anymore. Mm-hmm. He's just going to go from fight to fight. because he has the leverage to do that. And he's going to, and I don't blame him. He's going to get every penny out of it that he can. He's the biggest star in the sport. He should.
Yeah. So I think we're trending towards Charlo too. I think one thing I've heard from talking to people around all this is that it will be interesting to see if Al Haymon, PBC, is willing to do another one fight deal with Canelo, because that would mean that they've essentially served up two of their best fighters at that weight class for one fight type of deals. Everybody wants to make a long-term commitment with Canelo. Canelo just doesn't want to do it. And so I guess I'll be interested to see if PBC is willing to put up the, I'm just 40, 45 million total, 50 million total, whatever it may be, to get a Canelo Charlo fight made for a one fight deal with no guarantee of what Canelo is going to do in September. Because Keith, if he fights Charlo in May, he's not going to fight Benavidez in September. Like, that's not going to happen. So it seems more likely than not that he goes to Charlo, takes that fight, collects a big check, probably wins by knockout, and then moves on to the other option we're talking about. We're talking about Bivol being on the list. Maybe at that point we're talking about Golovkin, if they can ever get this Golovkin-Murata fight over the finish line. So that's kind of what the intel I've been hearing lately. Like, will Al put up the money for Canelo Charlo, knowing, unless he gets a commitment for one more fight from Canelo?
I mean, that's obviously an important question to answer, Chris, but I don't think Al will have much choice but to do that, because I think he's going to want to be involved in a big event. And also, what is he doing with Jamal Charlo at this point? He's not.
Well, that's an entirely.
Down, let's not even
that's
go.
Not,
let's
no,
not
that's
even
entirely
go down
separate
this,
conversation.
Let's go down this rabbit hole this, again, but he's not fighting Andrade. He's not fighting Triple G. I don't know that Triple G is necessarily interested in that either. So who is Charlo going to fight? He's going to be 32 years old in May. He's undefeated. He had a bit of a, I wouldn't say a rough time. It was a more difficult fight than I think people thought in his last fight against Montiel. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying he's taking training any less seriously or anything that, because there's no evidence that he's doing that. But maybe he's getting a little bored. He wants a huge fight. He wants to fight Canelo. He wants to prove himself against the pound-for-pound best fighter in the sport. So if that opportunity is there now, and there's literally no reason that it can't happen except that you want another fight, one or two fights in terms of a commitment from Canelo, I think Haymon will do it. I mean, he won't like it maybe necessarily, because of course you want to be in business with Canelo for as long as possible. But also you might be looking at it. I mean, you know, maybe they think I would favor Canelo over Charlo. It's not a gimme. It's no layup. But you would have to favor Canelo to win the fight. But maybe from PBC's perspective, they think that Charlo has a better chance of winning the fight than a lot of other people. So maybe maybe that's their chance to turn Charlo into a much bigger star than he is at the moment by knocking off Canelo, you know, and I'm sure there's going to be a rematch clause in there and everything. And then they might have to fight twice, you know, so that then you have two huge events.
I'm resisting the urge to rebut the Charlo wants to prove himself statement, because he could have done that over the last couple of years.
Oh God, Jesus.
Just saying.
Didn't Andrade even tell you to stop talking about this? Yeah, weren't you chastised by Andrade himself? When I heard that, I was like, man, he can't catch a break. That guy himself has heard enough of this shit already. I mean, come on.
It was like a YouTube video circulating of Andrade going at me at our fighter meeting. And like, look, Demetrius knows I'm his most staunch advocate out there. He just wants me to lay off the Charlo stuff because he sees Munguia and Golovkin being more mick. Well, he might be right. I just care more about two undefeated American middleweights fighting each other.
I'm with you. I would like to see the fight also. But one thing I've been told over the last couple of years is that the DAZN people have been told unequivocally that Gennady Golovkin is not fighting Demetrius Andrade.
Oh, yeah.
Don't ask.
Yeah.
So that's not even really an option. And that's got to be really frustrating for Andrade, obviously, because he's with this streaming service. He's undefeated. He has a middleweight title. And these people that are affiliated with the same network, and Eddie Hearn's not technically Golovkin's promoter, but they're affiliate, you know, whatever they're doing together. And he still can't get the fight. So I understand.
I think Eddie's on the outs with Golovkin at this point after his comments after the Liam Williams fight, where he kind of went after Golovkin there a little bit for not for waiting till
he's trying to entice him to get to take the fight.
My issue now, like where I'm coming around on the Andrade side on this, not to make this about him, but like Munguia is going to fight Demetrius Ballard. Like, I was okay with Munguia taking a few fights at 160 pounds to kind of get used to the weight. I was okay with Gabe Rosado. That's a pretty decent test for him, but I didn't dominate Gabe, but won pretty convincingly against Rosado. And, Andrade's just out there. Like, he's sitting out there, willing to put his middleweight title on the line. And we're going to Demetrius Ballard, who fought on the undercard of Munguia and didn't look good. Had to go the distance with Paul Valenzuela. Like, I don't know what Munguia gets us. And I've said this to Golden Boy. I've said, Eric Gomez was on this podcast a few weeks ago. I'm like, it's not like I think, Andrade might lose that fight. Like, Munguia's pretty good. Like, he's gotten a lot better over the years with his volume punching. I think his chin's pretty solid. Like, you got to keep pace with Jaime Munguia to beat him. I would have preferred them go straight to Munguia Andrade, but they're going to wait for Golovkin too. It's like everybody's waiting for somebody, Keith. It's like we can't get two people that actually want to fight each other. They're all waiting for something else.
Right. And meanwhile, you're paying for fights that people don't necessarily want to see.
Yeah, it's a greater problem.
Welcome to boxing. Right?
To boxing again. All right. As we're recording this, Filip Hrgović seems like he has an opponent in that IBF eliminator. He and Tony Yoka are engaged in negotiations. So I'll frame the question, Keith, to you a little bit differently. Over the last, 6 months, we have had Michael Hunter turn down a chance to fight Filip Hrgović. Hrgović, in our fighter meeting a couple weeks back, called Hunter a coward for that. He was pretty strong on that one. Recently, it's been Luis Ortiz, who quickly declined to enter negotiations there. It was Joseph Parker declined. Now, there are plenty of reasons why these guys won't fight Hrgović, especially the last two, because Ortiz and Parker could probably get something more economically viable in the next 6 months before than Hrgović is. But does it surprise you that we're kind of going down the list in an IBF title eliminator and we stop at Tony Yoka, who has done nothing to warrant a eliminator opportunity?
It doesn't, only because Filip Hrgović is a high risk, low reward type of proposition, right? I mean, why would Luis Ortiz is not going to fight Filip Hrgović? It makes no sense, right? I mean, he could get closer to a title shot, but he was knocked down twice by Charles Martin, obviously came back to land a big shot and win the fight. But he's showing signs of whatever age he actually is. He's not going to fight Hrgović. And I don't blame Joseph Parker either. Joseph Parker's been in a lot of tough fights, wants to get back into position to fight for a title. Now he's going to have to go through this guy now too. I don't blame him. I wouldn't do it either. And there is some history. Now they have, I think, 11 and 14 fights respectively, Hrgović and Yoka. There's history between them. They fought three times in the amateurs. Yoka beat him you were ringside for the semifinals of the super heavyweight tournament in 2016 in Rio. So there's a lot of history there, and it's an interesting fight. And I give Tony Yoka a lot of credit because I've seen much more from Hrgović as a pro than I've seen from Tony Yoka. So he would seem to me to be more prepared for the fight than Yoka. So it speaks to Yoka's confidence that he's willing to take this type of fight in what would I believe be his 12th fight. So, there's some intrigue there. You would rather see that type of fight happen a little further down the line. But kudos to both guys for being willing to do it. Now they have to come to an agreement here. I mean, all he has agreed to today so far is to enter negotiations. So they have to, get this deal done and everything. But if the money's there, there's no reason why they can't fight. And it's an interesting fight between two very good undefeated young heavyweights. And, Joseph Parker can go fight someone else to try to inch closer toward a title shot. And same for Luis Ortiz.
And one thing to remember too, in the grand scheme of eliminators, like the IBF, the winner of this fight's not going to get a title shot this year, I would imagine. Like the IBF is, I believe, way down in the queue for mandatories. And you're probably going to see a unification fight between Fury and the winner of Joshua and Usyk before the end of the year. So it's not like you take this opportunity and bam, heavyweight title shot coming this summer. You're going to have to wait your turn for a while and probably have to take another fight or maybe two fights in between. And if you're Parker, who has shown he can make some money, Ortiz, you're trying to cash out maybe against an Andy Ruiz type or something, there's plenty more financially viable options there for you. But I think it's a good fight, Hrgović against Yoke. I probably would have preferred Hrgović against someone like Zhang Zhele, like, because maybe you could have made it more, maybe it's more of a U.S. fight then. Maybe you can do it even in China. I don't know, like in that area, Macau, something like that. I mean, that's kind of a big event. I know Eddie Hearn has kind of eyeballed, you know, big fights with Zhang over in China at some point. Usually they involve Anthony Joshua, those talks. But yeah, I'd be curious to see what kind of fan base he has over there in a big professional fight. But
John Jolie is an older fighter, Chris. I mean, he's looking for this type of opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's been stuck in, you know, during the pandemic, he got stuck in China a couple of times, and he trains actually here in New Jersey, only a few towns away from where I live. I'm very familiar with him and his story and everything. But he can fight. I mean, he's just looking for the right, you know, dance partner, so to speak. And it would have been nice to see him get that opportunity, but it looks like Eddie's going to have to find him an opportunity elsewhere.
You and Zhang go for a slice or two in Jersey every so often.
He lives a couple towns away from me, right? And it's not a town where there are a lot of Chinese people. There are a lot of Italian people. It's, you know, it's that. And he's 6 foot six.
Yeah.
And like, I've asked him, I said, well, you know, you're a huge dude. Like what? Like, and a lot of people think he's a basketball player because he's so tall and everything. So, you know, but he gets a lot of, And he lives with Meng Fanlong, who's his former Olympic teammate and everything. And they're trained by the same guy, Sean George and everything. So, yep. No, to answer your question, no, we don't go out for whatever you
slice
said.
Pizza,
we go out for
slice of pizza, you know, maybe, somewhere in New Jersey.
We're both watching our carbs, obviously. So, you know.
All right, let me finish with this, Keith. Joe Smith fights this weekend. Initially supposed to face Callum Johnson, which I was really interested in because you'd have two kind of heavy hitters going at it in a fight that probably would have ended by knockout. Johnson had to bow out because of COVID. You've got Steve Geffard stepping in. Geffard's won 18 fights in a row, but very low-level type of opponent, so not huge expectations for Geffard coming into this fight. What I'm curious about, Keith, is less this fight than what's kind of next for Joe Smith, because there are going to be a lot of interested parties out there in Joe Smith. If you're top rank, maybe you want to try to make that Joe Smith better BF fight, which would be for three belts in 175-pound division. If you're Canelo, Joe Smith gets through this fight, does he enter those sweepstakes? Like, I doubt it, but, you know, he's got a light heavyweight belt. He's an American. Could probably market that fight pretty decently, especially if you're willing to do the fight in New York. You know, Daniel Jacobs is back out there. He's fighting in February. That's a fight that's been talked about between those two guys over the last few weeks or so. So, assuming Joe Smith gets through this fight relatively unscathed, what do you see as the future for him in the light heavyweight division?
Look, the obvious fight to make, Chris, and the fight that people have wanted to see is Joe Smith against Artur Beterbiev. He's the biggest knockout puncher in boxing among world champions. He's knocked out every pro opponent. He's 17-0 with 17 knockouts. That fight should be able to be made because they're both co-promoted by Top Rank. The way it was explained to me, Joe Smith was not happy with the financial offer he received to fight Beterbiev. He wants more money for the fight. If he gets that money, that fight can be put together. It would be a big event either in Montreal at the Bell Center or at Madison Square Garden, or you could put it on Long Island, you know, where the Nassau, whatever they call the Nassau Coliseum now. It's a refurbished building. That would be perfect because Joe Smith will draw a lot of fans from Long Island for the fight. So you can make some money at the gate in this fight, whether you put it in Canada or New York. It's a very intriguing fight. That's the fight that seems to make the most sense. The reason I say that I would say that Canelo doesn't make sense is because the fight would be done in conjunction with it would have to be done in conjunction with Top Rank because Canelo doesn't really have a promoter. Top Rank under no circumstances is going to pay Canelo Alvarez $35 million, $40 million, $30 million, $25 million. You know, you can keep going lower. They're not doing it. So, and I've been told that unequivocally. So, while yes, I think Canelo and Joe Smith would be a good fight to have at Madison Square Garden, and it would draw well. Top Rank's not going on the hook for Canelo's guarantee. Mm-hmm. So, I my best advice for people who want to see Joe Smith fight Canelo Alvarez is to forget it because I don't think it's going to happen.
I kind of agree with you, but I'd love to see it, man. Like that's just
I would love to. Me too, but yeah,
that's just fun. Just like especially you know? you were at the Garden when Canelo fought Rocky Fielding. He's typically a Vegas fighter, That atmosphere was awesome. Like, that atmosphere was so good, it convinced Anthony Joshua to fight there 6 months later. Like, that's how good atmosphere...
That didn't work out so great.
No, it didn't work out. Well, financially, ultimately it did. So, yeah, maybe it's all a big win.
Watch this. Hey, the finisher. Here he comes.
And then you collect that Middle East money 6 months after that. So, you
know... That is true.
His pockets were lined.
I think maybe something that people from the outside might not have realized is that there is a large contingent of Mexican people in the New York, New Jersey area, a lot in northern New Jersey in particular, a lot of Mexican people here, and Canelo is beloved. So, so he fights anybody at Madison Square Garden, and I think it'll do well, but particularly Joe Smith, because as you said, Joe has a big fan base out there on Long Island as well. So I guess, the one thing that Joe mentioned to me, I spoke to him for a long time on the phone last week, and he does this. He mentions this every time I speak to him. Basically, he wants a rematch with Bivol. Now, that's not as marketable as the Beterbiev fight or the Canelo fight, because Bivol.
Why does he want that? What does he tell you about? Like, because I was at that fight, and I actually said this to Joe like a year ago. I was like, Joe, like, that's one of those fights where, like, you know, 9 times out of 10, maybe 99 times out of 100, you're probably not going to win. Like, but Bivol, like, is just his skill level is the cut above. And unless you catch him, which Joe almost did late in that fight, it's just a tough fight for him to win.
Well, what you just said there, Chris, is the reason why he wants another opportunity, because he did catch him at the end of the 10th. I think it was the 10th, 9th or 10th.
10th or 11th. I think it was something like that. Yeah, good shot, right at the bell.
Yeah, him with a really good right hand. And Bivol was hurt. You could tell by the way he reacted and the way he walked back to his corner that he was hurt. If Joe Smith had 10 to 15 more seconds in that round, he might have knocked Dmitry Bivol out. He keeps... That sticks in his mind so much that Joe Smith has a clip of that on his phone that he keeps on his phone and that he looks at on occasion to remind himself of what could have happened that night in March 2019. I was at ringside for the fight as well. And he wants his rematch. Now, he does realize that the Beterbiev fight is a bigger fight now. And Canelo, who doesn't want to fight Canelo and make as much money as possible? Of course, he would want that. But he wants Bivol in the ring again. Now, he lost virtually every round of the fight. The other thing that he told me, though, that, you know, he's not really an excuse maker, Joe Smith. He's kind of like, you know, he's a hardworking, you know, man's man, and he's not looking to make excuses. But he did say that he had trained several times to fight Beterbiev. And the fight was promised to him after Beterbiev fought Callum Johnson. And then for whatever reason, the fight didn't happen. So he had been training, then not training, and training, and not training. The short version of this is that he thinks he might have been overtrained going into the Bivol fight. Now, Bivol's still an excellent boxer, a very smart fighter, not the biggest puncher among light heavyweights, but very tough to beat. But he thinks he might have been overtrained. He can't get over the fact that he might have knocked him out had he had 10 or 15 more seconds in that 10th round, I believe. So for him, that's what he wants. What we want, obviously, is the Beterbiev fight. And just one thing, Chris, I spent a decent amount of time on the phone with Steve Geffrard the other day. Guy's got a really interesting story. I don't know if he has much chance to win the fight because he's literally fought nobody. He's been a pro for 9 years, and boy, has he been matched soft. But he was managed by Shelley Finkel, promoted by Golden Boy, had a very good amateur background as a heavyweight, and then turned pro as a cruiserweight, got stopped in his pro debut. He got a really bad cut on his forehead in a fight he was winning, but he lost by technical knockout. Came back to the ring like 3.5 months later and lost again, lost a split decision to a guy who was 0-1-1. And Golden Boy said, all right, that's enough with you losing fights, take it easy. And Shelley Finkel did the same thing. He disassociated himself with Steve Geffrard as well. So he met this businessman, a guy who owned a like this huge chain of Home Depot type of stores on Long Island and Connecticut and New Jersey. The guy was very wealthy, lived down in Boca Raton. He saw Steve Geffrard sparring against Glenn Johnson one day, and he used to go to the gym, and he had invested in other fighters. And he said, well, who's this guy? And he said, well, believe it or not, he's 0-2 and blah, blah, blah. And he became his manager, and he helped rebuild his career. And unfortunately, he died. His former manager passed away in July of 2019. So obviously we'll never get him to see him fight for the title, but it's a pretty incredible story because he was supposed to fight a guy last Saturday night who was 7-8 or 7-8-1, so something like that, which is a ridiculous opponent for someone who's 18-2 to be fighting. But he was in the sauna losing weight to go weigh in that day. And Kevin Cunningham, who's a really good trainer and tends not to waste his time with guys who can't fight. So maybe he can fight a little better than we think. Kevin called him and say, hey, look, you can fight Joe Smith next. We'll scrap this thing, get out of the sauna and, you know, fight Joe Smith next Saturday night. He called Erickson Lubin, who's this very close friend who we actually lived with once upon a time. And Erickson said, you got to take the fight, man. I mean, you look, you know, you're 31 years old. It's a great opportunity to take the fight. He called Kevin Cunningham back and boom, he's fighting Joe Smith instead of some guy from Argentina who was 7-8. Whatever happened Saturday night, that's an amazing story.
It's an incredible story. And all credit to him for taking a fight like this on, what, 8 days notice when he officially got it. It's really remarkable that he's willing to do it. His chances to me are all about, can you keep Joe Smith off you for 12 rounds? And, you know, like, that's tough. Like, he's relentless when he comes at you. And the guy can crack, that's for sure. To kind of pivot it back to Canelo, I mean, I get what you're saying. Top Rank wouldn't put up that type of cash. I'm just, like, is there more... If Joe Smith comes through this fight clean, like unscathed, is there a more marketable fight for Canelo in May than Joe Smith? Like, if you do it in New York, like, kind of, you move up to light heavyweight, you fight this guy with a fan base in New York City, you do it at Madison Square Garden, like, you know, there are other good fights. Charlo is a decent fight. Bivol is a decent fight. You know, if you're looking at the sheer marketability, though, of a fight, like, that might be the biggest one.
Let me ask you, because from a gate standpoint, the fight would do big business in New York. Yeah. There's no two ways about that. But from a pay-per-view perspective, I think that Canelo Charlo is a bigger fight. I mean, there's no way that Canelo Charlo would not do more pay-per-view buys than Canelo Joe Smith. I think
you're probably right. You're probably right. I don't think it's a huge gap. But you're probably right. You know, Charlo's got a fan base and he's undefeated. He'll certainly sell the fight really well during that fight week. So, yeah, I can see that. It's close. Go ahead.
Chris, I wouldn't be surprised if Canelo Charlo did more pay-per-view buys than Canelo Plant, because I think people would perceive Charlo as a more live underdog in the fight than they viewed Caleb Plant as being. Of course, if he's fighting Joe Smith, he's got to move up to light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Joe Smith's a banger. You know, that win against, he didn't look good in his last fight against Vasov. He did not look good at all, but he looked fantastic against Eleider Alvarez. I don't think he ever looked better than he did against Eleider Alvarez, including when he fought Bernard Hopkins, because Bernard Hopkins was 50 years old when they fought, you know? So I think that's the best win of Joe Smith's career against Alvarez, who Geffrard, who he's fighting on Saturday night, actually has sparred in multiple camps with Eleider Alvarez, Artur Beterbiev, Sullivan Barrera, Sergey Kovalev. So he's been in the ring with all of the top light heavyweights of this era for the most part, except Joe Smith. So he's been in there with some really good fighters, just not in real fights. And of course, when the bright lights come on, we'll see how he does.
Yeah. I'm coming to you, by the way, for all Steve Geffrard information moving forward. You are a Steve Geffrard-ologist.
Listen, I'm gonna write a Steve Geffrard book. I don't think anyone's gonna buy it outside of Steve Geffrard's family.
Hey, it's a great story, like you said. I mean, get dropped by your promoter, get dropped by your manager, claw your way back over 18 wins, and if he's able to pull this off, that would be, I mean, wow, that would be a
hell of a story for sure.
No kidding, Keith. Good to talk to you, man. We will catch up sometime soon.
Same here, Chris. Take care, man.
When we come back, a new element of the podcast brought to you by FanDuel. Fight fans, throw your best haymaker with a risk-free bet from FanDuel Sportsbook. Even if your fighter gets knocked out or tapped out, new customers get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING, and you'll be able to bet on all the biggest boxing matches and UFC fights. FanDuel offers all your favorite bets. Choose from the money line, to the method of victory, to which round the fight will end, and so much more. You can even parlay different fight bets together. The bigger your parlay, the bigger your potential payout becomes. I like a couple of bets for this upcoming light heavyweight title bet between Joe Smith Jr. and Steve Geffrard. Stick around for that later in the podcast. I get deeper into those. FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook and is now live in New York. I am a part-time New Yorker. I'm pretty happy to be in New York. A lot of my friends over the years, they were driving to New Jersey to make bets on FanDuel. Now, they get to stay in New York City and make the bets right there. The app is so easy to use, and when you win, you'll get paid out in as little as 2 hours. To place your bet risk-free, just sign up with the promo code BOXING and make every fight mean more with the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, so on this podcast in 2022, we are going to add some more gambling elements to this, courtesy of our good friends over at FanDuel. And we're going to stay locked in this weekend on the light heavyweight title fight between Joe Smith Jr. and Steve Geffrard. This is a title defense for Smith and a huge opportunity for Geffrard, who is coming in as a massive underdog. And as big as those odds are, as wide as those odds are for Geffrard, I can't bring myself to betting on him in this fight. Joe Smith is minus 1,600 going into this fight. That's a big number, but I'm that confident that he's going to win. Joe has looked excellent in recent fights. He knocked out Aledier Alvarez. He has a win over Bernard Hopkins. He won his last fight, even though it was close, against Maxim Vlasov by decision. So he's shown he can win in a variety of different ways. Take Joe Smith as my lock of the week. Now, if you're looking for a prop bet, you got to go with Joe Smith by knockout. Again, not great odds for something like this. Joe is minus 440 to win this fight by knockout, but Geffrard has never fought anyone on the level of Joe Smith. He's won 18 fights in a row, but they have been effectively against club-level opposition. He has taken this fight on 8 days' notice. So even though he was training for another fight, he wasn't training for Joe Smith. And I've seen a lot of Joe Smith fights. Keeping Joe Smith off of you is a very, very hard thing to do. So I'm taking Joe Smith to win, and I'm taking Joe Smith to win by knockout. All courtesy of our friends over at FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can download podcasts. And we'll see you next week when maybe we'll find Sergio Mora.
Mannix, I'm a man on the run and I'm not doing your fucking podcast. We're not doing it, bro. I'm a man on the run. On the run!